Hello there. You're about to enjoy a special hour-long radio episode of Simply Scottish. This is one of over 140 weekly episodes that aired on radio stations in the US and Canada between 1999 and 2001. The radio show was co-hosted with my father, Andrew McDermott Sr. I hope you enjoy the show, and I welcome your comments via our website, www.simplyscottish.com. Good evening and welcome to the first Simply Scottish show of the 21st century. Tonight on Simply Scottish, we'll look at the life and legacy of two famous Scots, author Muriel Spark and inventor Alexander Bain. We'll also resume our ongoing Scottish Islands feature, Scotland's Small Wonders, by looking at the island of Arran. We've got a great selection of Scottish and Celtic music for you, all our regular weekly features, news, previews, reviews, and much more. Join us for the next hour as we bring to you something special, something Scottish. Welcome everyone to the 71st edition of Simply Scottish. I'm your host Andrew McDermott, with my father Andrew McDermott Sr. here in the studio with me. Dad, do you want to say a few words?
I'd like to say good evening and welcome to all the Simply Scottish listeners, hopefully who have just joined us from other parts of the United States and Canada. We want to wish you a very, very good Scottish welcome and hope that you'll tune in to us every Wednesday evening and look forward to talking a little bit later on in the show about the ships and the shipping industry in Scotland from years past up to the present. Over to you, Andrew.
Well, Happy New Year, listeners. I hope you had a great Christmas and New Year holiday. My family and I spent the holidays with each other and we enjoyed it. So it's finally the year 2000. We had almost no sign at all of any Y2K problems, and now the path ahead is clear for all of us to enjoy a brand new year full of opportunity. Coming up in a few minutes, we'll take you to the Scottish island of Arran in this week's Scotland's Small Wonders. Welcome to Simply Scottish. We'll be right back. That's the accordion in action there. You're listening to Simply Scottish Radio with your hosts Andrew McDermott Jr. and Andrew McDermott Sr. Well, ever since November 3rd, 1999, we've been doing an ongoing feature here on Simply Scottish called Scotland's Small Wonders. Now, this feature is something I set up so that I can give you information and so that I can let you explore, virtually at least, some of the many Scottish islands that dot the coasts on the west and north of mainland Scotland. There are many islands, hundreds to be exact, small and large, and I've been covering a different island every week since November, since the beginning of November. And we had to take a little hiatus the last part of December, since there was so much on there, like the Christmas show and our Millennium show. Hope you enjoyed those shows, by the way. So now we're back with our Scotland Small Wonders feature, and tonight we're going to look at the island of Arran. Often referred to as Scotland in miniature, the Isle of Arran, with a short compass, captures many aspects of the beauty of Scotland as a whole, from towering granite peaks inviting hill walkers and climbers, to peaceful sandy bays overlooked by palm trees, growing in the warm climate of the Gulf Stream. The wildlife is outstanding, with deer, pheasant, otter, and eagle, readily seen in the mountains. There are over 100 species of birds. There are colonies of seals near coastal caves, trails and pathways to mysterious Bronze Age stone circles, and many relaxing angling hours to be enjoyed by streams or sea. 7 challenging golf courses tempt the golfer, whilst history and heritage is catered for at Broderick Castle and various museums. Of the island of Arran's 4,500 inhabitants, over 1,000 live in the main port village of Broderick. Annual events in Broderick include the Arran Festival of Folk, around the second week in June, and the Broderick Highland Games, which is in early August. Now, the name Broderick comes from the Norse words meaning broad bay. And Arran itself, the word Arran, means peaked island in Gaelic. The island's main town has lots of places where visitors can stay, eat and shop. You can buy fish and chips to eat on the beach, get a sandwich from the baker or buy food, drink and newspapers from the general store. And it has its history too, as seen in the ancient Broderick Castle. Broderick Castle has been occupied by a stronghold of some kind since the 5th century, when an ancient Irish tribe came over and founded the Kingdom of Dalriada in Scotland. It was probably destroyed and rebuilt many times during its turbulent history. In 1503, the castle and the Earldom of Arran were granted by James IV to his cousin, Lord Hamilton. Parts of the present castle date from the 1588, during the ownership of the second Earl of Arran, who was the guardian and regent of Queen Mary. Broderick Castle eventually passed into the hands of Mary, Duchess of Montrose, who happens to be daughter of the 12th Duke of Hamilton. Long line, long family line there. And she revitalised the gardens and the outer walls of the castle. And since her death in 1957, it has been owned by the National Trust for Scotland. Inside the castle are paintings, porcelain and furniture from the various owners. It is also home to the art collection of 18th century author William Beckford, whose daughter married the 10th Duke of Hamilton. I don't know, Dad, can you keep all these Hamiltons in order here? You don't know much about the Isle of Arran, do you, Dad?
Well, I know it's very famous for its wool, the sheep. Certain type of sheep that they have up in the Isle of Arran.
And also certain jams and marmalades also come from the Isle of Arran.
Most of the islands, as you say, I'm not sure how many are populated, but all of them have contributed to various wools, you know, like the Shetland wool and Orkney and the Hebrides. All these islands do contribute to all these wonderful things that make Scottish gifts so very, very popular.
But I was going to say, like I'm talking about Broderick Castle, which is the, you know, the main fortification on the Isle of Arran. Yeah. you know, a lot of people come and go. People think, you know, that history can be stamped in a book, you know, nice and easy like that. But mm-hmm. you know, it's not so easy as that. You know, people come and go. There was a lot of murders in Scotland. You know, people trying to take over, kings and queens getting murdered, and
yeah.
even their babies getting snatched so that you know, they couldn't further their kingdom. But
yeah.
that's what I'm saying. That, you know, that lots of Hamiltons on the island of Arran, so it's kind of hard to keep track. But anyway, so the last owner of Brodick Castle was Mary, Duchess of Montrose, and she passed it on through her death to the National Trust for Scotland, who now keeps it under control and keeps it tidy and keeps the visitors coming to it. So that's Brodick Castle, which is the historical end of the island of Arran. Scotland's Small Wonders is an ongoing weekly spotlight on Scotland's many beautiful islands on her western and northern shores. This ongoing feature is made possible in part by Joanne Mackenzie Winters, who is writer and producer of a Scottish website that features detailed information on many Scottish mainland and island destinations. So thank you, Joanne, for that information. I'm working closely with her and her website to be able to bring you this information on these different Scottish islands. And I hope that one day it'll make you visit them as you go to Scotland too. Dad?
I'd just like to say that myself and my family have not been to a lot of those islands. Most of these islands can be serviced by ferries.
Yeah.
The McBrain Ferry. They service all those islands. Now, probably you can fly to quite a few of them, but most of them you have to go by sea, which is pretty rough around the coasts of the west coast and the north coast of Scotland and the east coast.
But these islands are not too far away at all from the mainland, and you can get there pretty easy, as my dad said, by ferries, modern ferries. Caledonian McBrain is one ferry group that does a lot of ferrying between these islands that I'm talking about. So if you ever do go to Scotland, you need to visit these islands because they are a very integral part of Scotland's beauty and her history. So, Dad?
Yeah, one little point too. I read in papers over here that Lady Diane, who was killed a couple of years back, her mother is on one of those islands that you've mentioned. It escapes me right at the moment, but...
Her mother has a house, right?
Her mother has a house in of the islands off the coast of Scotland.
A lot of people go there just to get away from, you know, the busy life that we all lead nowadays. They're very peaceful, they're very very beautiful, and quite small, you know, the villages. I don't know if we could all get used to village life with one post office and one general store, but, you know, if you're into that, I think you'd really appreciate it. But anyway, that's the island of Arran, and that's our island on tonight's Scotland's Small Wonders. Now, in association with our feature on the island of Arran tonight, our Scottish featured website of the week is this one, www.arran.uk.com. Now, this website explores Arran in a very personal way and includes links to everything from the historic Brodick Castle to the local fish and chip shops in the villages all over the island. If you're going to visit Scotland, chances are you'll find yourself on the island of Arran. So for a personal virtual exploration of Arran until you go for real, visit our featured Scottish website tonight, www.arran.uk.com. Now, let me spell that out for you. www.arran.uk.com. And that's our Scottish featured website of the week on the island of Arran. Coming up, we've got information on Muriel Spark. You'll meet this Scottish author who's responsible for one famous book you've probably heard of, The Prime of Miss Jean Brodie. That's Muriel Spark coming up after this song from The Corrs.
I've been here many times.
some music from the Corrs there, the Irish group The Corrs. You're listening to Simply Scottish Radio, live here from Harlingen, broadcasting all over South Texas and Northern Mexico, with your hosts Andrew McDermott Jr. and Sr. Well, tonight one of our spotlights falls on the Scottish author Muriel Spark. Now, if you don't know who she is, you might recognise one of her most famous novels, which was The Prime of Miss Jean Brodie. And you may have also seen the movie that was made of that book, starring Maggie Smith. And my dad will be telling you a little bit more about the movie in just a second, after I tell you a little bit about who Muriel Spark really is. Muriel Spark was born in 1918 in Edinburgh, Scotland. She was educated at James Gillespie School for Girls and Harriet Watt College. Spark had been a professional writer since the 1940s. Her earliest works were documents for the British Political Intelligence Office at the end of World War II. Her actual literary career began after writing a fiction writing contest. Well, she won it, actually. And in 1951, her first novel, The Comforters, was published in 1957. She has written three volumes of poetry and numerous novels and short stories. Then she went through a religious conversion in 1954, becoming a Roman Catholic. Well, she is rather romantic because she wrote a lot of books based on love stories and love tales. Some of them people think are autobiographical, meaning she went through them. A lot of what she did write, Muriel Spark, was what she had gone through herself. And her most famous novel, The Prime of Miss Jean Brodie, is kind of a repetition of what she went through in school in her childhood days in Edinburgh. Now, a word on her writing. Like many writers, she's almost fanatical about the process of writing, and her pattern remains precisely the same for every new book. She writes in longhand with special fine-point pens, which are for her use only. They must be thrown away if anyone else touches them. And in the same spiral-bound exercise books from the same stationer, James Thin. She never plans her books or writes a preliminary synopsis, but simply starts with the title and goes. And when the book is finished, she rarely makes any changes. One of her most famous stories, The Prime of Miss Jean Brodie, takes place in the city of Edinburgh, Scotland. There are girls in a school, and the name of the fictitious school is Marcia Blaine's School for Girls, where Miss Brodie is a teacher. The school is a very prestigious one, and the girls all wear identical uniforms. During her youth, Muriel Spark attended a similar institution in Edinburgh, the James Gillespie's Girl for School. James Gillespie's School for Girls. She thus chooses to set her story in a fictional school similar to the one she attended. Now, do you know the story of The Prime of Miss Jean Brodie, Dan?
It's been many years since I ever saw the film. It depicted a point of the time about the education system in Scotland. To let you understand, Andrew, that Edinburgh was a very, very wealthy, very wealthy city. Although we had a lot of poor people that lived in the city, there was a lot more well-to-do people in the city, nobility,
yeah,
and people that had money. And it depicted the lifestyle of that period of time, way back in the 30s and 40s, and from then onwards, regarding discipline and other forms of corporal punishment, which was shown in the film, which didn't go down too well with the authorities, but a thoroughly enjoyable movie, to say the least.
So the basic story is Jean Brodie, she's a teacher in an Edinburgh school for girls, and she kind of challenges the institution and challenges the hoity-toity high class of Edinburgh at the time by teaching her way. And she gets pretty explosive, as you can read in the novel. She teaches these certain girls things that they'd usually never learn. And she takes them all over Edinburgh to learn all about the capital city. And she just basically is a very explosive teacher. And at that time, that was pretty shocking. And so this book is a little bit of how a rebel, gets to do what she wants instead of what society at that time, considered the norm. But that's what the story is about. And And was the... I don't think you've read the novel, Dan, have you?
No, I didn't read the novel, but...
But the movie was pretty...
It was very accurate regarding the academic side of the system in Great Britain as itself. England were very liberal with the corporal punishment for many, many years, and they used to cane with a bamboo cane. They used to whack the kids over the backside, like what you say over in here, like getting paddled. And that was done in terrible ways to the children. But it was the difference between the Victorian times and the modern times, where changes were being made in the schools towards children, and education was changing everything. And the Prime Minister Jean Brodie brought a lot of things to light regarding how a teacher should be in the schools at that time.
Muriel Spark now lives in Tuscany, and I just read an interview on The Scotsman, which is one of Scotland's national newspapers. I read it online just a couple of days ago. She was in the newspapers because she's getting ready to write a second part of her autobiography. She has one autobiography out of her life, of her childhood in Edinburgh, and then her life in Africa. She's been to many, many countries of the world. And like I said, she now lives in Tuscany. And she's 81 years old, so she's still alive and kicking. And she's about to publish her second autobiography, which looks at the latter part of her life. So that's Muriel Spark, and one of her most famous novels, The Prime of Miss Jean Brodie. Well, have you ever used a fax machine? Do you use that at work or at school? Coming up next, I'll introduce you to the Scottish inventor of the fax machine, Alexander Bain. Right now, here's one of my mother's favourites, The Water is Wide.
The water is wide, I can cross over, neither have I wings to fly. Give me a boat that will carry two, and we will go, my love and I. A ship there is that sails the sea. She's loaded deep as deep can be, but not so deep as the love I'm in. I sink or swim, oh, love is fair and love is fine, and love is warm when first it's new. The morning dew. Give me a boat that will carry two. Carry two, my love and I.
Scottish singer Tommy Scott with The Water Is Wide. This is Simply Scottish, and I thank you very much for listening tonight. We're about halfway through our show, and we've got lots more to come, so please stick around. Well, another spotlight on this show tonight falls on inventor Alexander Bain. Well, who's that, you say? Well, have you ever used a fax machine? And I know a lot of people do. People use it at work and at school and, in the office to send documents instantaneously to other people. And the fax machine, whether you know it or not, is quite old in its technology. Now, let me just tell you a little bit about the fax machine and about how it came to be. The fax machine is one of today's fastest growing areas of office automation and business communication. To the non-technical observer, the fax machine seems to send a photocopy to another fax machine over the telephone lines. You dial a number, place the pages you want to send in the machine, press start, and off they go, at about a minute a page. Long before photocopying machines, the fax machine was invented in 1842 by Alexander Bain, a Scottish clockmaker, who used clock mechanisms to transfer an image from one sheet of electronically conducted paper to another. Alexander Bain patented the automatic electrochemical recording telegraph, as he called it, in the year 1843. Various machines using Bain's technology have been in use for many years. In 1934, the Associated Press began to use wire photo to transmit photographs. But then television came along and brought a news revolution. People could see live or same-day footage of events rather than one or two photographs. It's only today that fax has become a household word. The current fax revolution has come about because of digital technology, which has increased the speed, compactness, and reliability of the machines, as well as brought down prices. This technology has found its real market in the business world, where efficiency and fast communication have been necessary since the days of the railroads. Fax machines make it possible to send anything that can be printed on a page to anywhere in the world, in not much more time than it would take to hand the page to someone across the top of your desk. And it was all made possible through the work of Scottish clockmaker and inventor Alexander Bain, who was responsible for the original fax machine technology in 1842. So that's Alexander Bain, who gets the spotlight, or actually shares the spotlight with Muriel Spark, whom I talked to before that last song there, Scottish author. These are two famous Scots that share our spotlight tonight, because I feel that they've brought a lot to Scotland and to the world. And I hope you've enjoyed learning about them. That's Muriel Spark and Alexander Bain, who invented the fax machine, or the technology, rather, the technology that they use still today for that fax machine. He invented that way back in 1842. So, Alexander, thank you. Well, now it's up to our random fact tonight. And our random fact, now let me see, I've got everything right here because I like to prepare for the show and have it all ready for you listeners. Our fact tonight, and the reason I do this is because you never know, at a party or at your work or in the office or at school, you never know when you might just need a random fact to give to someone to start off a conversation or whatever. But this random fact tonight is this. Scotsman John Law, who lived from 1671 to 1729, founded the Bank of France in 1716, and later the city of New Orleans with the West India Company. In the 1720s, he was Comptroller General of France. How do you like that? Founded the Bank of France in 1716. That was Scotsman John Law. And that's tonight's random fact. But tonight's Scots word is the word dook, D-O-O-K. And that's to go for a swim. And it also means to pick up apples in your teeth from a bath or a basin of water. Now, let me put this into context for you. Say it's Halloween. If you go duking for apples, that means you're dipping your head into the water to try and catch these apples. It's just a tradition that we have in Scotland.
also, not to be confused, in Scotland, if you're going for a dook, it could mean you're going for a swim, like a dip.
Yeah, that's what I said.
Going
yeah.
for a dip in the sea.
You can either dook for apples using your teeth in a bath, or it also means to go for a swim. Probably a rather quick swim, because usually the water's cold in Scotland. It's not the tropical beaches we have down here in South Texas. It's always pretty cold at the beaches over there in Scotland. So if you're going for a dook, you're either going for a quick swim, or you're going to pick up some apples in your teeth in the bath or in a basin of water, which usually happens around Halloween. So that's the Scots word of the week, dook, D-O-O-K. Right now, you're going to hear from my dad, who's going to talk a little bit more about what he talked about last night, which was all about shipbuilding in Scotland. Shipbuilding in Scotland. Got to make that clear. And tall boats and lighthouses and all that good stuff. Dad?
Well, after having received some beautiful little ornaments, lighthouse ornaments from my children and my wife at Christmas time, which I was tremendously happy to get. I just wanted to mention a little bit about the shipbuilding where I came from in the port of Leith, which is a town close by Edinburgh, right on the River Forth estuary, which leads out to the North Sea. Shipbuilding, when I was a young boy, was very, very popular. And when I was about 15 years of age, as I've said on last week's program, I tried to get away to the whaling, because whaling was a very popular fishing industry at that time. Not anymore, thank goodness, because we had to save our whales. The shipbuilding was extremely busy at that time, way back in the early 50s and earlier years before that, with all the Queen's ships, the Queen Mary, Queen Elizabeth, and so on, so on. Myself, I had a great fondness for the ships and sea, because I grew up with all my family being at sea as fishermen, sailors, in the Navy. So ships, like most Navy people, I'm sure if there's any Navy people out there, you know how you feel about a ship, because a ship was always called her. We refer to the ship as if you were talking about a lady. There she goes. When the ship goes down the slipway to be launched, you always say, there she goes. And when a ship goes from New York to Europe, it was always, there she blows and there she goes. So most of you Navy people out there will understand exactly where I'm coming from. And the shipping experience that I had as a kid was absolutely tremendous. And one day I would love to take the same course as the Titanic, to a point. I'd love to go from New York to Europe by ship, avoiding any icebergs on the way, of course. But suffice to say that the sea is in my blood, and I still have a great fondness for all the ships of the world and all the people that sail them.
You're listening to Simply Scottish. And this beautiful piano track that you're listening to is actually from Jani. And you've all heard of Jani, the piano player and composer. And I like to choose, piano songs and instrumentals every so often to kind of enhance our show here on Simply Scottish. But yes, you are listening to Simply Scottish Radio, and my name is Andrew McDermott Jr. And you just heard from my dad, Andrew McDermott Sr., on shipbuilding and his memories of that industry, which was a very big industry where he lived down in Leith. But right now I have a message that the leader of the Scottish National Party, Alex Salmon, delivered on New Year's Day. It was a millennium message that he gave to the nation of Scotland. Let me fill you in a little bit. The Scottish National Party, the SNP, are the official opposition in the new Scottish Parliament. Now, the leading party that's making all the decisions is the Labour Party. And the Labour Party can actually be tied to London. So it's quite a bad thing that the Labour Party are still ruling the Scottish Parliament, because the decisions are ultimately being made from London, and we don't need that. We need to be pulling our own reins. And no one understands that better than the Scottish National Party leader, Alex Salmond. And this was his millennium message to the nation of Scotland on New Year's Day. Mr. Salmond said that Scotland had a head start in the millennium celebrations. The country of Scotland has made a new start with the opening of the Parliament in July of last year. And despite some criticism, the Parliament has made a good start, he says. Scotland and its people are preparing for independence in a few years. And he is proud to be at the helm of that. And the Scottish National Party are doing as much as they can as official opposition. They're doing as much as they can to educate the people of Scotland that we really need to be going at it alone. And we've been together with England since the Union of 1707. And of course it's been rocky. It's always been rocky when you consider relations between England and Scotland. And they managed to pull off quite a few things together, you know, the British Empire, and quite a few handsome things that you could package into one big project called Britain. But in order for us as both to continue as countries, England and Scotland, they really need to be looking inside and looking at themselves as a country, because you can only go so far in a so-called union. And the reason I say so-called is because much of it is ruled by English politicians and English lawmakers. These are the people that are making decisions. And most times Scotland is left in the dust when it comes to important decisions regarding the European Union and the rest of the world. You ask anybody about Scotland in any part of the world, say the United Kingdom or Great Britain, they'll always come back with the word England, because that's always been the dominant partner in the United Kingdom. And it's about time that we started pulling our own reins. So that's Alex Salmond's message for the new millennium, for the new year, for the 21st century, that we must go at it alone. So Alex, I'm with you, and Simply Scottish is with you. I'm doing a lot to try and accomplish that for Scotland, to get Scotland going on her own. So I'll be doing that a lot more, but I just wanted to bring you that message.
Oh yes, Andrew, I think that Scotland is probably going to continue on a similar note, that they're always going to be forerunners. But Scotland is such a small country. You know, you have to understand that Scotland can only produce so much. It can't go back to the days where it had lots of coal mines, lots of steel mines, lots of shipbuilding, and many, many other industries that we had way back in the old days. What we do have now is the technology in medicine, technology in education, and other forms of industry that would appeal to the rest of the world. We still have the biggest economic ace up our sleeve is Scottish whiskey, believe it or not. Yeah. That, at one time, even for the whole of Britain, was the biggest single economic growth that they had in the whole of Britain, and that included the coal industry, the shipbuilding, you name it. that tiny country put out so much Scots whiskey to the rest of the world, it was able to keep Britain afloat in many ways.
This union that England and Scotland have had, it's never from the start been a fair union. Because England have always been the dominant partner, as I said, in Parliament and in the decision-making. You know, the British Broadcasting Corporation, the BBC, as you've all heard of, obviously, is the ruling body for media in Scotland, television and radio. And, you know, the BBC won't even let Scotland have their own nightly newscast. That's how bad it is. They want to remain having a generic UK-wide newscast that is dominated by English news. And in fact, I brought a couple of months back to you a poll that they had taken of about 100 of these newscasts, these generic UK-wide newscasts, and it was only 3 of them that had stories about Scotland, major stories. And so that can't be accepted. And that's the kind of thing I'm talking about, this unfair union. But I'll bring more about that in the coming weeks and months, because, as my dad said, Scotland is going to be moving in that direction. They did take a poll recently throughout the whole of the United Kingdom, and a majority of people do feel that Scotland is going to be going on their own pretty soon. So we'll bring more developments to you in the near future. And also, on a related note, the website time.com, you all know the magazine, Time magazine, well, they did a very interesting thing that I'd like to commend them for on the show tonight. And what they did in their millennium, they have a millennium website that was supposed to be celebrating the new year and the coming of the 21st century. And on this website, they had a world events map. And you could click on, I think there was about 10 locations around the world, you could click on them and find out what they were going to do for the new year and for the millennium. And they had Edinburgh. They had Edinburgh. You could click on it and learn about what Edinburgh was doing in their Hogmanay celebrations. And they didn't have London, which is something I really thought was quite spectacular, because usually things like that, especially in America, will only have London, and they will have, you know, nothing about Scotland on there, especially when it's worldwide. But I really thought that was very commendable for them to do a feature on Edinburgh and not on London, which is the norm. So congratulations, time.com, for having the foresight to do that. Well, we're going to close up pretty soon, but right now this is a track that I wrote quite a few years back. It's called I Miss the Heather, and obviously it's the heather in Scotland, and it was at a time when I was getting pretty lonely and pretty what's the word?
Blue, I would think.
Yeah, I was missing Scotland quite a lot, yeah. And this happens to be one of my dad's favourite tunes that I've written. He's supposed to like all the songs I've written, but this one has a special place in his heart for some reason. So this is I Miss the Heather. Well, we're going to finish up with a quote. I like to do this. I like to finish up each show with a quote. And tonight's quote is from Alexander Graham Bell. Alexander uttered these words. As you know, Alexander is the Scottish inventor of the telephone. And he uttered these words as his last when he died in 1922. He said, "So little done, so much to do." And that was his last words. Scottish inventor of the telephone, Alexander Graham Bell. Well, that concludes our first show of the 21st century. Glad you could be with us tonight. Dad, a parting comment?
Yes, I would like to say to the winter Texans, all you snowbirds, if you have any Scots blood in you, please make our day and give us a call.
Well, from Andrew McDiarmid Jr. and Sr., we thank you for listening. And until next week, may God bless you and have a good night.
Major funding for Classic 88 FM comes from the Catholic Diocese of Brownsville, the University of Texas Brownsville, Texas Southmulch College, and listeners like you.
Spoken content on radio episodes of Simply Scottish is copyright 1999 to 2001, Simply Scottish Media. All music is used with consent of copyright holders or covered under radio broadcasting agreements. For more episodes of Simply Scottish, visit www.simplyscottish.com.